everyone. I'm Ben Stenfels. You might have seen me around or heard me talk before. This is kind of a... I'm going to talk a little bit about Software Freedom Day, a little bit about free software, and about some other stuff to do with activism that will maybe set this apart from some of the other Software Freedom Day type speeches you've heard before. I'm a software developer. I write computer programs as a job, and I write free software as my job, and I get paid to do that. So that's what I do. I'm based in Melbourne. I work in a home office in Brunswick, and I run my own business. So in the past, I've done a few of these Software Freedom Day talks and some big Love Beginner and stuff like that talks, and we've talked a lot about what free software actually is. So I'll skim over a bit of that today. Can I just say, who's been to a talk about free software by me or someone else before?
Quite a lot of people.
Yeah, cool. All right, that's good. I think it'll be well paced today, hopefully. Part of this event is it's kind of a grassroots event to build local communities' knowledge and experience with free software. So this event itself, Software Freedom Day, is an annual event, and it's held all over the world, as you probably know. Last year we had a fantastic big event at the State Library in Swanson Street there, and I hope a few of you came along. It was really good. We had some great speakers and lots of activities and things like that. That's a red balloon, you can't really see it because it's the projector. This is Dale holding a whole lot of stuffed animals at Software Freedom Day. The other exciting thing we had around that time of year last year was we had Richard Stallman in town for a bit of a visit, and he did a whole lot of speeches, so I hope you managed to get along to one of those.
Yeah.
Before we get into the what free software is, I should actually just go through a few thank yous from the great event last year, because I think it's one of those things that there's a lot of people putting in a lot of work behind the scenes, and people don't always get the appreciation that they probably should. So last year, it's probably really important that we thank Dale Dickens, Donna Benjamin, and Kathy Reed. They were the main three organisers for the event last year, so I don't think any of them are here, unfortunately, but I guess we can just give them a little round of applause for that. And for this year, this is a lower key event, just to mix it up a little bit, and this has been a fantastic job of arranging this by the Linux Users Victoria Committee, particularly Lev Lafayette, Jerry Baum, Wen Lin, Daniel Jitnar, Andrew Pam, Deborah Henry, and Alex Carver. So, just hang on. And also, while I'm here, I'm going to mention that after this, we're running some workshops, which I think Lev announced out there. But these are workshops about how to expand the free software community. So they're, I'm going to thank these people now because they might not get to be thanked later. They're Tony Forster, Alex Garber, Alex Fraser, Daniel Jitnar, Kathy Reed, and Lev Lafayette. So thank you to those people for running the workshops. Okay, so now I'm going to just skim over a bit of what free software is, because that's part of what today is. So what I'll tell you first about is this kind of old-fashioned business model of proprietary software, because I think that sets the scene well for what free software is. So the proprietary software business model is based around a software developer, whether they're a company or an individual or whatever, producing some software and then licensing it under a restrictive license to the person that gets to use it, say the user like me or you or anyone. So in those licenses, they tend to apply a few different restrictions that you've probably seen. They restrict what you can actually do with the software. So they say, you might only be able to use this in an educational setting, or you might only be able to use it for 30 days, or you might only be able to use it as long as you don't say anything against the company who wrote it. There are software licenses. the other restrictions they tend to place on it are that you can't actually study the code to see what it's doing. You can't actually tell. You can see what it's doing on the surface, but underneath, in the actual computer, you have no idea what it's actually doing, whether it's connecting to the internet or accessing your files or you know, communicating with somewhere else. That's a little bit worrying because as most computers are connected to the internet all the time, and you know, we put a lot of importance in our files and we keep everything on our computers. That's a concern. It's a concern for people on their own computers, but it's also a concern for computers that are running important services, like in hospitals and you know, traffic lights and government databases and all that sort of stuff. The third thing is that not being able to see what the software does is the second thing. The third thing is not being able to actually modify what the software does. So typically the company or the person who produces this proprietary software would give you a piece of software, and if you actually need it to do something else, or it doesn't quite do what you want, or it has a bug or something like that, you need to take that piece of software back to the person who wrote it and say, please, I'd like this feature, can you add it for me? Or it has this bug, can you fix it for me? And that's fine, often, as long as that person is still around and willing to help you and actually likes you and you can afford to pay what they ask to be paid. It's one of those situations where they have a monopoly, and as we know from history, monopolies tend to breed higher prices and lower quality services. So your alternative really is, like, if you can't get it done by that person, your alternative is only to go and get something entirely different, which may fit with the data you've got on your computer already, or it may not work, or it kind of puts you in a position of unknown anyway. The last thing that the proprietary software restriction that the proprietary software normally has is a restriction on whether you can share it or not. Normally, the restriction goes, you know, you may not share this piece of software with anyone. So they're essentially saying you can use it on your computer, but you can't give a copy to a friend who might like a copy. You can't donate it to a school or something like that. So those are four restrictions that are normally placed on proprietary software. And proprietary software is also often called non-free software because you don't have the freedom to do these useful things. So that's proprietary software. And let's contrast that with free software, where the idea behind it is that you can do all of these things. You can look at the software to see what it's doing. You can use it to do anything you want. You can modify it to suit your needs, and you can also share it with other people. It's probably important that I point out the word free software can often be a little bit confusing, because we use the word free to imply a few different things. One is free of charge. In this case, it's meaning free as in freedom, where, you know, like free as a bird, or free as in
speech.
Free as in speech. Not free as in barbecue, that's...
Free as in lunch.
That's right. So the background behind all this, yeah, it's a nice idea, and it's helpful to understand where it came from, because it didn't just appear. We didn't just get this free software operating system. It actually came from a whole lot of thinking and development over a long period of time. So this fellow here, Richard Stallman, began a movement. He worked in the MIT Artificial Intelligence Labs and was finding himself more and more restricted by the software that he used. He grew up in a culture where sharing was just the way it was. You could, the software didn't come with restrictions on it. Software was just software, and you could modify it. If you're a programmer, you could modify it, or you could get someone else to modify it for you. More and more he began to see companies trying on this proprietary business model, trying to restrict what people could do with their software. So this was around 1983, 28 years ago, he started this project called the GNU Project, which you may have heard of. That the project was to build a free software operating system. So start from scratch and build a with these values built in. So the ability to use the software for anything, to study it and modify it to suit your needs, to share it and to share these modified copies of the software. So off you went. It took a little while, and a couple of years later in 1985, 26 years ago, he started the Free Software Foundation as a non-profit group to sort of channel funds into the project and manage the direction of the project and things like that. After a few years, they built a whole lot of really useful free software, such as compilers and debuggers. These words tend to mean things to people who write software, but if you don't write software, they may not mean anything to you. They'd written all these little pieces of all the operating system. They built most of the operating system, but they still had one part they needed, and that was the kernel that coordinates all the programs running together and tells them to take things in turns. That they found in the kernel Linux, which you may have heard of too. So that was around 1991, which is 20 years ago this year. So there's actually quite a lot of history behind all this, and it's come a long way, really. But in the scheme of things, it's still pretty young. So, yeah. The situation we have now, really, then, is we have a free software operating system. We have the GNU system and Linux, the kernel, and they're put together as this operating system we know as GNU plus Linux or GNU slash Linux, or often just Linux. And it's actually an amazing operating system. It's some of the parts in free software are the best out there. They're the fastest, the most reliable, the cheapest often, because often while free software is free as in freedom, it's also free of charge, depending on whether you're buying it with service or support or things like that. So it's actually the envy of a lot of software companies now. There's free software creeping into all these sort of devices, like your home router box that you might plug into your phone thing, and your telephone and all things like that. So it's really exciting at the moment, because it's really starting to broaden its reach. The other aspect of that, though, is that as it becomes more sort of entrenched in general culture, the values of the system start to be a little bit watered down. Without days like today, we tend to somehow lose some of these values. So some of the things that, some of the problems we see are that free software operating systems that were originally designed as, free software, these bugs creep into them, with the bugs being that they have non-free software embedded in them. That includes things like drivers for wireless network cards and drivers for video cards, and plug-in things for Firefox that are non-free, and things like Adobe Flash Player, and things like the telephony program. And this is kind of unfortunate in a way, because you've got this great free software operating system, and then we're adding on these non-free components, which is actually devaluing the original philosophy of it. So, that's just about my quick summary of free software in itself. One point I'd like to make is that it's actually important that we talk about GNU plus Linux or GNU slash Linux as the name of the operating system, rather than just Linux. There's a few reasons for this, and some people have different reasons. The thing I think that is most important is that the people who write the Linux kernel software don't tend to talk about freedom as an issue. They're actually agnostic to that, as that's just the way they, they've publicly stated their views. They're not really that concerned with freedom as a general issue. By adding the word GNU out the front, so GNU plus Linux or GNU slash Linux, we actually add the philosophy of GNU to this word when we're spreading it around. So I'd encourage you all, you're entirely free to do whatever you want, but I'd encourage you to use the word GNU plus Linux or GNU slash Linux when you're talking about the system. So that's a little bit about free software. What I wanted to sort of talk about next was I've kind of got more interested in activism in free software and other areas over the last couple of years, particularly because I've been doing a bit of work on software patents and things like that. And it's interesting to see how these sort of things happen. Like, you don't really think about it, but how did the women's rights movement happen, and how did the environmental movement happen? And these all have sort of impacts on what we're trying to do, because activism is really just it's people wanting to see a positive change in the world and actually stepping in and giving a go. So it's kind of interesting to look at some of the other techniques people have used and try and apply that to what we're doing.
Seasons at Microsoft.
So what I find really interesting is the way that free software has been promoted in the past and the way it's kind of grown, because no one could deny the outrageous success of this system and the free software movement, because from nothing, 28 years ago, we now have a fully free operating system, which is just incredible, really. Like, the large corporations take decades to build these sort of things, and the community and people scattered all over the world have built this operating system. And one of the things, people often criticize the free software movement for particular people in the free software movement, such as, where are we? Richard Stallman, because he has a fairly, he's incredibly intelligent and a very logical thinker, which makes him a fantastic programmer. But people can sometimes find him a little bit abrasive in the way, because he's less tolerant of people who don't understand what he's talking about. So he doesn't go for the social graces that maybe people are used to often when someone's explaining something they don't understand. If you've attended one of his talks, a few people come away feeling really angry and frustrated about this whole thing, because it criticized something they in themselves believed and didn't find him to be you know what I mean, anyway. if you've been to one of his talks and listen to his videos online, the question time is quite interesting. They're often quite abrupt and short answers for questions. I think about, is that the right way to do it? Because you're putting people off who are just interested in learning a bit about what you're doing. And then I think, well, maybe it's not perfect, but it's certainly worked. Like, he's built this operating system, and he's done it in a way that most of these social movements couldn't do. Like, most of these social movements are based around changing people first and then changing the world. But with free software, he's gone and changed the world right from underneath us. He's built this free software operating system, and now the world just has to catch up. And I'm not saying it's him on his own at all. It's certainly not. There's a lot of other people.
Might be a question of whether Unlucky's wanting to play with the tools. I think that's a success, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, as I said, I think we're at a point where some of these other movements are really quite interesting, and I think we're getting towards the sort of educational phase of free software, because we have this mostly complete operating system now. I mean, I work as a software developer, and I do graphics, and I do music, and I do all sorts of stuff. And although free software doesn't do everything perfectly, it often does some things particularly poorly, as you know, it does everything I need, and it plays most of the videos I want to watch now, which is really exciting. The web and the video, the multimedia sphere has just flourished now with particular developments in video formats being released and new browsers coming along. So that's really exciting too. We're getting out of this lock-in with the Adobe Flash Player and things like that, because it's really only used for video these days. No one really does much in the way of animations or things like that. So that's kind of exciting. We're getting an awful long way there. And that means for someone like me, I can use this operating system every day for all my work and all my personal things. I mean, thankfully, I've been able to do this for about 5 years, which is great. I don't know really where that sort of says to me that we've reached a certain stage of this. I mean, when you can actually just use it, there's not much mucking around anymore. I've certainly spent my fair share of time mucking around with the internals of this operating system, but you say they just put the CD in and off it goes. So it's great. So currently, I guess I look at some of these movements like a group I work with run a program called the Ride to Work program, which is about behavior change for kids, getting them involved in healthy lifestyle sort of things, like walking to school or riding their bike to school, things like that. So that's kind of the behavior change step I feel like we're at with free software. It's about really bringing it into people's minds, and I don't know, and I'm not sure how we do this entirely, but this is a good start, something like today. It's been really interesting to watch the rise of people making things and these hacker spaces type things you might have heard of, these Arduino type projects. The rise of this thing that you can actually do things yourself. You don't need to just go and buy it from somewhere and take it home and use it for its one purpose and then throw it away. You can actually make things yourself. And I think this is a good kind of step in the right direction for this sort of thing, because people understand that if they can do that with their, whatever it is, their phone or their, they can change their little robot to do something, or make it pour a cup of coffee or whatever, silly things you do, fly, or they sort of take this mindset of, well, everything isn't just set in stone, and they apply that to software too, because over the last 20 years of proprietary software, we've kind of got into this feeling of, no, software's just as it is, and don't touch it because it won't work anymore. And make sure you get your virus updates from the people who supply virus updates, and everything will be okay. And I think we'll get there eventually. So, as I said, I think really the world has changed already underneath us, and the work we're going to need to do in education it's going to take a long time. Like, free software has only been around for 25 years or something like that. So it's going to be, it might be decades before the general populace understand some of these issues. But it's really just about being persistent, and that's what activism is about. It's being, having a long-term view of all these things. I'm certainly not, an experienced activist by any means, but I certainly find it interesting. So I thought I'd see if I could offer you some suggestions about activism in itself. One of the tricky things with free software in Australia we find is that most of the action that we see on the internet and in the news is in the US, and it feels a long way away. We can feel quite disconnected and lonely, I guess, in software. I know I felt like that myself a few years back, and I got involved with a few other people and started a group in Melbourne to talk about free software. And we don't do, we do some political things from time to time, but often it's actually just us hanging around talking about some of these issues, because it's actually nice to talk with another human being about it. It's reading about it on the internet and watching videos, it just isn't quite the same. So this event is really where it's at, I think, for building a community that can spread the word a bit. That's not a tip really in itself, but I guess that's observation. One thing I think is important is living according to your own values. There's a lot of people trying to push their own values onto other people, and it's really important that you understand that I'm not telling you that you must use a free software operating system for all your work. that's a conclusion you need to come to in yourself and be comfortable in yourself. And if that's a conclusion you come to, then you probably should go home and use a free software operating system, despite what your brother or your friend might say. You need to do whatever, you know, whatever makes you happy. And that applies to everything, not just free software. So I think you need to be confident, to be confident in your own opinions to be happy, I guess. And I'm hoping you just choose free software at the end of it. This is kind of I'm taking the easy route, really, speaking at an event like this, because as you know, you guys have been here before and you know what free software is already. So preaching to the choir is easy in a way, because you know, none of you guys are going to shout me down, I hope. So the really hard thing, which is it's hard as a human to sort of go out and talk to other people where our views might conflict with them, and that's actually what we need to do in a lot of cases. But the good thing about having a whole lot of people is that people respond really well to people who are like them and have opinions like them and live in the same place as them. So it's really it's a grassroots sort of movement. So I couldn't go and, that's a good example. I don't know, I'm not going to try and offend anyone, but there's a lot of people who I wouldn't be able to talk to well and convince them about what free software is and why it's important. And that's why you guys are so important, because you can do that. You know those people. You know how to speak to them in their own language and understand their own preconceptions and hang-ups about that sort of stuff. Yeah, so I guess the message out of that bit was that you do actually need to step outside your comfort zone and go and talk to some people who may not agree with you straight away. And it's always difficult doing that, but I guess you just need to be calm and receptive to what they're saying and thinking, and give them time to let these issues settle in, because free software is actually it's a mind shift, really, because it's just so heavily drummed into people the way that software is. You know, people use emotive words like piracy and hacker and things like that to make some of these things seem really negative, where, and I'm not saying copyright infringement is a good thing. You shouldn't infringe copyright. But computing can be people often want to steer away from it. I don't know. You do have to step out of your comfort zone, that's all. One really specific tip is that it's often really difficult to talk to your own families and close friends about this sort of thing. And one of the suggestions I can offer is, don't worry about your close friends and family. Let them be your close friends and family and love you for who they are, for who you are. And go outside that a little bit, because often they just see you as the, you know, the husband or the friend or the son. And, you know, you won't change them. They'll probably never change. So get over it and go and find some people who might be more receptive to your issues. But that's just what I found anyway.
But you need both, don't you? You need to preach to the converted as well as to the people that aren't converted, because I think both of those two dimensions are important. You've got to be able to find a community where you can resonate and strengthen yourself before you can go out there and preach to the converted.
Yeah, and I hope that this is what this is today.
Mm.
I think.
But all I'm saying about your family is you may not ever convert them, so don't let it get you down.
No.
In a way, because that's okay.
Agree, if I may, that's something.
Yeah.
I have a mother and an aunt who are terrified of computers. They had a computer was set up in such a way that it took hours to even to the first program. At their request, I changed it by installing Linux, and they were much happier with their system afterwards.
That's fantastic. That's a great story.
Even though I might have spent hours trying to preach to them, I might not have.
That's true. And I'm not saying you need to preach to your family. I'm just saying some people will never be happy with if they know you really well as the kid who grew up, you know, eating dirt and stuff like whatever you do when you're a kid. They may not really want to listen to you as a, when you're talking about these important philosophical issues or telling them why they shouldn't. There's all these wonderful pieces. Did you have a point there?
Yeah, I was going to say, do you think in the long run there is a technical advantage, or I should say, there's going to be an innate technical advantage to open source software because it's open source?
That's a pretty deep question.
Carbonated beverages there. Well, that's just something that I have noticed. You know, I mean, back in the day when, back in the day when the version was like 0.9, I think was the first public release of OpenOffice. It was a little bit clunky. I mean, it had most of the functionality there. Really didn't have a working database and so forth. But of course, now I don't see any reason whatsoever that a person would be even on a functional level, that they would be using Microsoft Office Suite. The early GUI interfaces for Linux were not always the most accessible for people, but today, you know, as Sweet was previously pointed out, and I've had exactly the same experience actually, that you can introduce complete novices to Linux and they will find that the learning curve is actually less than if you can introduce
which
them
is really
to a proprietary operating system. This
and it's often the people who switch over from something and already know.
Right, and what I'm saying is the speed of improvement in open source software is faster than the speed of improvement in proprietary software. And that leads me to hypothesize that there is actually a technical inevitability.
I
kind of like shy from historicism that says, this is historically inevitable, because that's the phrase that's been misused a few times in the past. But I tend to actually think there is something innate in the way that open source does things that means that it actually cannot lose in the long run.
That's probably true in relation to specific examples. I'd say, MySQL, for instance. I mean, I think there's a book I read once on that. But yeah, that can happen that way. I mean, there's some good examples where that is true.
Yeah. Well, I'll just wrap up the rest of this bit on activism, and then we'll have a few more question and answer type of things. One of the really important things is that if you can your activism can be donating your time to help promote a cause, which works really well. The other thing that is extremely beneficial is that if you've got a good job and you have enough money to do the things you need to do, supporting some sort of group that does the thing that you're trying to support is often one of the best things you can possibly do, because often there's a lot of people around helping but a lack of funds to do these sort of things. Now, just in case you're wondering, I'm not actually going to ask for money. But I just want to tell you a little bit about some of the Free Software Foundation, for example. They're everywhere. We hear about them all the time, and they've done so many campaigns that we know of, and they're in the news, and we have speakers coming around the world talking to us. They've actually only got 10 people in their office. They're a tiny little non-profit group. So that's just kind of to give you a feeling for what they actually do with not very much in the way of resources. So one of the best things, if you so chose, would be to, you know, become a member and donate some money to them. That's actually a really beneficial thing. Or, of course, any other free software project you might choose to donate to. There's a whole lot of projects out there doing good work, some with legal issues, some with, the One Laptop Per Child getting computing out into remote communities, things like that. So that doesn't just apply to free software, but donating your money as well as your time is actually a really beneficial way to help these programs. I've talked a bit about acting, about this being a sort of a local. So I talked about it being a lot of it happening in the US. This is, it's really about So there's only so much we can do over the internet. So we need quite a lot of these sort of events and just getting people together and talking about it to build, like to, just to build a, it's even just to renew our own, yeah, like as you said, like just renewing our own batteries a bit. This event kind of charges me up for the remainder of the year usually, just to get into it a bit more. That's about the end of what I wanted to say on that. What I'm aiming to talk about was a little bit about what free software was, a little bit about being an activist and hey, some techniques you can do with that. And to finish, I think it's just really important that we keep positive about this, and because we've got this fantastic free software operating system out there, and now we just have to help people use it. Finally, I'd just like to present an award. This is the free software has this practice of giving things silly names or funny names. One example of this is there's a text editor called Emacs, which some of you may have heard of or used, or not, doesn't really matter, it's just a text editor, quite a popular one. There's a program called Emacs, stands for Editor Macros, which isn't funny in itself, but there was a program called IM, which stands for IM is not Emacs. It's a recursive acronym. It's true. Then after that one was that came out, there was another one called ZWI, which came out, which stands for ZWI was IM initially, ZWIE. So there's this kind of fashion of giving them these names that will hopefully give someone a bit of fun along the way when they realise what it actually stands for. So for the best free software pun of 2011, I'd like to present to Lev Lafayette for free as in barbecue with open source.
I got a badge.
Alright. Thank you very much for this.
So thanks for listening.
Okay.
I'm happy to answer some questions.
Yeah, I've actually had disagreements with Richard Stallman. Last year, I emailed him and asked him, because he was in Melbourne, to come to Software Freedom Day. And he emailed me back, and Stallman said, no, he wouldn't, because the disks that were being handed out for Linux did not satisfy his definition of what free software should be, i.e. they weren't nuisance, and they may have offered proprietary software without it being in them.
That's so, quite correct. So yeah. A lot of free software operating systems, so-called, come with non-free software. But it is possible to use a free software operating system that has no proprietary software on it, such as this one I'm using here, which is called Triskel. Unfortunately, Ubuntu and Debian, although fine operating systems in their own right, and not to be criticised by for lack of effort on these parts, do contain some proprietary software that we need to be aware about.
Yeah, that's true. But
the other thing was that he was in Adelaide, so it couldn't have been.
Yeah,
he was presenting it.
Yeah. The other thing is he goes a bit further than that. He doesn't regard a Linux operating system as satisfying his definition of free. He, for the reason that certain distributions offer proprietary software to be installed without it actually being in the Linux system in the first place. And I think that's an extreme and counterproductive extent to go to, because people thus are making a choice along the lines that you said about 10 minutes ago. They may decide install their proprietary software, or they may decide not to. So in that vein, I do regard Richard Stallman as being a bit extreme, and to some extent even setting back the free software movement.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely an important analysis of it. There's both sides of it, because yes, he's certainly that type of person that is very focused on what he wants to do.
I mean,
you can't criticise him for the success that the operating system has had in 28 short years.
You go to the free software site, and there's a list of distributions that he and the Software Foundation he mentioned recognise as being officially free according to their definition. And that list is very narrow. It's NewSense and a few others. And a lot of distributions, I think, like Debian, that you think would be on the list, aren't.
Yeah, but, you know, as I said, you just need to be comfortable in your own heart that you're using an operating system that you're happy with, and not, and judge yourself by your values and not other people's values. So if you disagree with them, then that's just okay.
I think one definition that can be useful is, or viewpoint, is that a lot of social movements like free software are somewhat of a journey. So people might start just dabbling in free software and using, you know, maybe Ubuntu or something that's very user-friendly, accessible, and then that's fine, it's good. And then but it's also good to have people at the other end, like Richard Stallman, who are pushing towards an entirely free software, and we need to recognise the value of both ends of the spectrum.
I actually like Richard's purity in that matter, because he won't even use a website that has non-free code on it.
Yeah.
I work for an organisation, and I was looking after somebody's shift, and he needed to call us for a certain product that he had, and he wouldn't do the renewal on the website.
Right.
Yeah.
It's interesting, particularly because he recognises that it asks your computer to download
software
and run it on your computer.
He says,
"No, I don't want
the free
software."
No, I actually admire that.
And it's worth pointing out that that's one important activism technique, is polarising the debate and saying, yes, this is okay, no, this is not okay, and here's the line. And I'm sticking to that line, whatever you say, you know. So you either have to come on my side of the line or be on the other side of the line. And that's just a technique.
And
it actually is very useful.
Because of what you're saying about it's good that we have someone like this.
I think that's almost ideological purity.
Like
phones,
for instance, the phones that which I've been convinced by someone else to call the computer that I carry in my pocket. It's a computer, it's running software.
Yeah.
What freedoms do I have in that software on this device that I supposedly own?
Yeah.
I recently upgraded from a phone that's 7 years old, where obviously no software for an Apple, there were no free software operating systems on a phone at that point, to an Android phone, which is still not entirely free software.
No.
But because I see myself moving along that continuum, I'm now running an operating system that is a whole lot more free than it used to be. I'm not there yet, but as long as I can move forward, I consider that progress.
But there are some areas that have an enormous way to go before satisfying free software. The graphics design area is a blatant example, because as somebody studying graphics design, it's virtually impossible to use things like GIMP. Things like Photoshop and Adobe products are set in the course as compulsory tools. And the problem with something like GIMP is that it's the Pantone proprietary color scheme. It is just something that you've got to have for professional work, and there is progress that some people want to see towards an open colour scheme. I think there's some woman, I think Ginger, someone in conferences who's wanted
that's
to
true.
Do that.
There's
a long way to go.
On a lot of free software.
Yeah.
But that's a separate issue.
It is.
I think actually I don't consider Richard Stallman an extremist. I think it's but I believe it's actually a necessary political call that if you're going to be espousing this philosophy and you say, okay, I believe in it, but I'm willing to make a concession, then that concession you make is essentially saying, yes, the other side does have a valid point. There is, like, two. And as soon as you take this, it's a valid point in both sides, because you're the weaker side, you're eventually going to lose. So, and I think, any time there's been a political revolution, it's always been
persistence is going to count for a lot, I think.
Yeah. And the other point I wanted to make is, I guess it is in a way a revolution, but a lot of people plan for the battle, but they never plan for victory. Do you think that the free software movement is prepared?
Do I think it is?
Yes, because you talked about 30 years down the track, but I reckon if there's going to be a fundamental shift, it's going to catch everyone off guard. There's going to be some new piece of technology, and all of a sudden the game's going to change.
I guess the thing that makes me more confident is that the software is already there. We're not trying to change. We're not trying to play catch-up in a way with building the infrastructure underneath. The infrastructure's already there. And, there's certain things that will need to be there, like support, better, you know, wider support, you can call up on the phone and say, oh, I've got this problem with my disc or whatever. You need that sort of support, but that'll all come in time, I think, as slowly the business model grows for that, because at the moment, maybe the business model isn't quite viable, but it will be eventually.
Yeah, I really appreciate that point in your talk, where you said that unlike a lot of other social justice and social progress movements, we're in the interesting position that we don't have to anymore convince people to build this stuff. There's already a huge amount of people building this stuff, continuing to improve it. So we don't have to convince people on an ideal. We can say, here's something really useful, and here's why it's been built.
I think I'd like to modify that a little bit, because I think we still need to convince corporations that it's ready to develop software professionally.
Yes, we're not only in the position where no one is doing this, and we're trying to move everyone toward it. There's a whole lot of people already there, so let's go join those people.
The other thing is that if somebody doesn't want to give money to open source projects, another way in which you can help is to get onto mailing lists and answer people's questions and so on, because that's almost analogous to the telephone support that you see in commercial environments, is the help you can get open source on a mailing list.
Extremely valuable.
So that helps a lot. Because I know, because I got onto a mailing list yesterday and asked a question, and then somebody answered. So,
helping other people is one of the best ways to help the movement.
I see a lot of people transition from proprietary software. Be surprised that the free support is actually better than paid support in a lot of cases.
Right.
So,
you mean as actual like commercial support for free software, or just
people transitioning from having to call Microsoft or Intel
directly,
and
thankfully I've never had to do that,
and realizing that forums and mailing lists are actually providing better support in a lot of cases than paid support. So
it's always good.
I work for a company that provides some of our role is providing paid support for free software.
We already have plenty of people writing free software, but providing help to newcomers is one of the best ways to build that community.
Mm-hmm. And the problem is, we have a lot of people, the people writing free software are people kind of like me who are a little bit nervous about going out and talking to people and, maybe can't phrase things in the right way for other people to understand. So that's why it's really important that non-technical people understand these values and go out and help other people too, because it's not all about the software, it's actually about the workflow of using the software and why you would use the software and understanding what fits for a certain need and all that sort of stuff.
I think it's possibly in terms of the values, a bit of a scope to promote free software to other people who are interested in like the environmental movement and other social justice movements as well. Because in many ways it fits quite nicely with the values that people hold that belong to those movements.
Hopefully they will be able to make that jump quite easily compared to some other people.
Yeah, and it is quite an easy jump to make depending on the kind of software that you need to run. So promoting the values as well as just the technical stuff. And it also helps to disperse the stereotype of the geeky Linux guy who, which I admit that I held until I got to know the community a little bit better.
Yeah.
So it's good.
Yeah, we do have some stereotypes to break.
Yeah.
Slowly.
I think most movements do. Yeah.
So, it's 2:30 now. Lev?
Yes.
The workshops going to start now?
They are indeed. What we'll do is we'll have a brief break, maybe about 10 minutes or so. We're at 2:30. Then we're just putting up on the whiteboard just outside this door where the workshops will be held. They will be held. There'll be at least one in this room and others in the big room. The theme of the workshops is planning for free software in the coming year. Other Software Freedom Days have been about in getting the wider community and introducing them to free software. This one is about the free software community planning about promoting free software in the coming year and how they're going to do that. So we have a number of workshops where we want to get people to engage in that thinking about what can we do to make SOC-free software more well known in the wider community in this coming year. So we have speakers or coordinators, I guess, of the workshops speaking about sharing code for those involved in programming. We have the One Laptop Per Child project, talking about promoting it in international development. We have talks about how to build free and open source software groups, talks on how to introduce, how to teach free and open source software. So that's going to, so if you're finished here, we'll have a brief break of about 10 minutes or so, and then we'll do that. And thank you very much for your presentation, Ben. That's great.